and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis. Coming to you out of Tehran, I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, we have a special look at the P5 Plus One meeting that has taken place in Istanbul, with so far both parties saying that there have been very positive results, and now scheduled to go for another round of talks in Baghdad in May. Well, stay with us right here on this news analysis as we take a closer look at the possible results of these P5 plus one meetings and what it could mean in the long run. And I'd like to welcome my guest right here in the studio with me. Very happy to have Dr. Mohammad Marandi from Tehran University. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, it's been quite interesting today. We've seen back and forth a couple of different meetings. First, starting these meetings, going into it with some skepticism. But overall, as we have heard Catherine Ashton and Dr. Saeed Jalili speak after the meetings, it seemed to have ended on a positive tone. What's your take of it so far?
I agree. I think that over the past couple of days, Western media outlets have been let it be known that Western diplomats are trying to put a positive spin on the upcoming talks. And it seems that after the representatives of the two sides spoke, that so far the talks, we can say probably that with caution, that they are positive. The fact that there is no talk so far of Iran halting the enrichment of uranium on behalf of the 5 plus 1 is a very, very significant move. And I think it's a major achievement on the Iranian side. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that over the last year and a half, the Iranians have shown that every time Western powers have tried to punish the country and to prevent Iran progressing in the nuclear field, Iran has overcome. And for example, the fact that they've been able to enrich uranium at 20%, the fact that they've been able to actually turn that into fuel, and the fact that the Iranian elections had such a high turnout during the height of Western sanctions. In other words, Western countries have really gone all the way, as far as they can, to damage Iran in the hope that perhaps Iranians would lose their morale and the Iranian position would be weakened. But I think, as most Iranian analysts expected, it was the other way around, and it united the country even further. I think we see a recognition of this to a degree on the Western side. And also you have to take into account that the Russians and the Chinese have really parted ways with Western countries.
Yeah, I wanted to look at that as a matter of fact. Do you think in general the parameters have changed, and part of the reason is because there is no longer that united front, as you've just pointed out, about Moscow and Beijing? How significant is that in this whole formula of things?
I think that's very important. After what happened in Libya, the Russians and the Chinese felt cheated. Mm-hmm. And then in Syria, they decided to take a stand. They felt that the Americans and the Europeans wanted to change the map of the Middle East. And I think this is also reflected in their position now with regards to Western intentions in the Persian Gulf region and with regards to Iran and the Iranian nuclear program. And it's not only Russia and China. I think you see a distancing of India away from Western policy. In the past couple of years, India had sort of tilted a bit more towards the West, and it seems as if it's tilting away within the framework of the BRICS, which is a very important new, not global structure, but global, let's say, loose alliance of nations. And Brazil as well, Latin America, Brazil has been very critical of Western policy towards Iran. So I think you see a global change taking place, a shift away from Europe and the United States as the center of gravity and center of world politics. And I think it's being reflected in the talks. But of course, at the end of the day, I think The most important thing is that the Iranian people have been united, and that Western countries have realized that the Iranians are not going to give up their rights to enrichment. And I think something that you commented on before we came on air was very important, and that is that after the Tehran Declaration, if the United States and Western countries had agreed and played a reasonable game, if they had sold Iranian enriched uranium at 20%, and they had gone along with what they had agreed to, Obama had agreed to in his letter to the Brazilian president and the Turkish prime minister, then there would have been no need in the first place for Iran to produce uranium at 20%.
Right. It seems very ironic that at that point in time that it was agreed to in Turkey and the Iranian delegation was ready to go with it, but it was the United States immediately that said no. And now at this point in time, Iran, of course, is enriching 20%. And now I don't think that Iran is going to back down on this, as Dr. Jalili was just saying in his press conference. Interesting enough, I want to look at the press conference, because you talked about the media. You said that prior to the meetings taking place, that you saw positive spins coming out of the Western media. Let's start from there, because why do you think that that was taking place?
Well, it's difficult to say, because we have to see the ultimate outcome of the talks. The fact that there are going to be further talks, especially the fact that they're going to be held in Iraq again, mm-hmm. is another achievement, because the Iranians wanted the second round of talks to be held in Iraq, and Western countries didn't. Right. So this shows that Iran is carrying a great deal of weight and authority in these talks. But I think that it's probably has to do with the fact that Western politicians may be looking for a way out of this problem. They've gone as far as they could with regards to sanctions. They've, to be honest, to be blunt, they've gone and done and carried out some pretty barbaric steps. The fact that they've placed an embargo on the Iranian Central Bank, theoretically speaking, means that they intend to prevent Iran even from importing rice, mm-hmm. because they want to shut down trade completely. Or an embargo on Iranian oil, which where they try to force third parties from purchasing oil from Iran, is intended to wreck the economy. In other words, the intention is to devastate the economy and to severely hurt ordinary people. That's theoretically what they're up to. They've gone as far as they can, and they haven't achieved the results that they want.
So they have seen in the interim, as they have exerted more pressure, though, that the Iranian people have seemed to be as united as ever. As Dr. Jalili also talked about, once again, the latest parliamentary elections. And that turnout, how significant do you think that type of turnout in the middle of what has been taking place and the Western countries especially exerting pressure on Iran, how significant was that in the whole scheme of things?
I think that was probably one of the key events and one of the most important events over the past couple of years in the country. I think the turnout surprised all of us. It surprised me, definitely. The fact not only that the turnout was very high was important, very high, it was like roughly 65, almost 65%. Right. On the other hand, you had reformists participating, different trends within the principalist or conservative camps. You had former President Khatami participating, allies of the current president, Mr. Rafsanjani. You had almost everyone. It brought all the different political forces that work within the framework of the Constitution into the playing field. And it was a major voice of confidence by the Iranian people with regards to the Islamic Republic. So while the turnout was very high and while it was very good for the Islamic Republic, I think it was very bad news for the Western countries that were carrying out the sanctions, and it weakened their position, because not only does it show Iran's strength, but it also shows that sanctions and inhuman actions that are being carried out by the West only have an adverse effect on Iranian public opinion, and also they have an adverse effect on independent countries. Countries like India do not like being bullied by the West. Countries like China, like Russia, like Brazil, they find it more and more unacceptable the way in which the Europeans and Americans are acting. This is no longer the Eurocentric world where the white Europeans dictate their terms to the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. What about a lot of these sanctions not only not getting the results that they have wanted, but also backfiring in many ways? We see now oil prices just skyrocketing in the United States, in Europe. Do you think that that also is a factor in this right now, because they're going through very difficult economic times, and with the oil prices going higher and higher on top of it? How important is it now for the Europeans? Many experts that we've talked to had said prior to this that they were basically going by what Tel Aviv expected of them. Is it possible that right now they're looking first at their own country's interests?
Well, I think that up to now it's clear to most of us that what they were doing and what they have been doing is not in the interests of Europe or the United States. The European economies are in crisis. Over the past few days, it's become clear that they're not out of the woods. Things are getting much worse. Many people believe that the worst is yet to come. The U.S. economy is suffering very badly, and it seems that over the next few years, it will continue to deteriorate. And the more tensions with the Islamic Republic of Iran, as you pointed out, the higher the price of oil. But in addition to that, this also helps tilt the balance of power further away from the United States and the Europeans. Mm-hmm. Because the countries that actually benefit from these sanctions are the rivals of the Europeans and the United States. It's the Chinese who get extra trade with Iran. It's the Indians who get extra trade with Iran. The Brazilians and all those countries who do not recognize the sanctions, they gain a great deal from this. So the Europeans are really shooting themselves in the feet on different fronts. And I think that obviously Israel wants to keep confrontation as high as possible. But the Europeans and the Americans can only go so far. And I think there's also one final issue, at least that I can think of right now, and that is the changes taking place in the Middle East. Countries like Saudi Arabia and other oil-producing countries are highly unstable. Yemen is falling apart, the old Yemen at least. Iraq is a new country and has poor relations with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has problems at home. It has problems with the people of Bahrain that they've occupied. And the millions of people who work in Saudi Arabia from abroad, the Egyptians are very angry with the regime, the millions of Yemenis in the country. The Saudis feel under siege, and they have an old and dying king. The future of the royal family is unclear because there are thousands of princes. So Saudi Arabia is not very stable. Countries like Libya are also unstable. So it's not clear how long the stability in the oil market, which is unstable as it is, mm-hmm. how long this can continue. And if things deteriorate, then they will need Iran much more than they need Iran today. So I think the Europeans are very concerned about the changes taking place in the Middle East, as well as the adverse effect of the sanctions on Iran with regards to their own economy and the tilting balance of power away from Europe.
There were reports from some of the Western media that Iran would be a little bit more flexible this time around because of the effect of the sanctions inside of the country. What's your take on that analysis of the situation?
I don't think that's true at all. I think that Iran would only be more flexible if the other side recognizes Iran's right to enriching uranium. What we have seen today is at least a number of signs that indicate the 5+1 may be changing its attitude towards
such
the
as,
country.
Tell me some of the signs.
Such as the fact that they have not been calling on Iran to immediately halt the enrichment of uranium. Even in the media, the focus has been on enriched uranium at 20%. There has been no talk of enrichment at 3.5%, 4%, or 5%. Mm-hmm. And I think this itself is a huge shift away from what we had before. The fact that Mr. Jalili was very firm in his comments in the interview afterwards shows that Iran was speaking from a position of strength. And I think that The Iranians also feel that while the sanctions may be to a degree hurting Iran, the Europeans are hurting just as much as Iran, if not a great deal more, because their economies are on the decline. And in the long term, as I said, the balance of power is shifting away from Europe and North America to Asia and to the countries like the BRICS. And therefore, in the long run, it is Iran is on the rise, and the Europeans and the Americans really cannot, you know, they cannot go much further with the sanctions, and they cannot go after the military option because that's inconceivable. It would be a disaster for them, and they would be, you know, be responsible for that disaster. So I think that there are signs to be optimistic. Obviously, I'm sure that if the Europeans and the Americans are serious about recognizing Iran's rights, the Iranians will be willing to take further measures to help build confidence.
What does that mean?
Well, I really can't say at this point. It's for them to discuss with the Europeans. But I think that if the Europeans, for example, first build take some confidence-building measures, mm-hmm. then the Iranians would reciprocate. The step-by-step a proposal put forward by the Russians, and which I think Mr. Dr. Jalili made, I'm not sure if he was referring to the Russian proposal or he was talking about it in general terms, it reflects that. In other words, if they take a positive step forward, then the Iranians will take a positive step mm-hmm. forward. So perhaps, for example, Iran would be more open about different sites for them to visit. But it would have to be within the framework that of a comprehensive solution. In other words, if the Iranians open a military site and get nothing in return, then there's no incentive.
Right.
For example, the Parachin site, the IAEA had already visited there twice. Now again, after a few years, they raise questions about it. So for the Iranians, the question is, when does this end? Is this an never-ending game? If it is, then we don't want to be a part of the game. Mm-hmm. But if the other side is willing to be serious and say, okay, if we do this, if you allow us to visit these sites, we'll take a certain number of measures, or preferably, and I think probably what the Iranians are now saying, is that they have to take certain steps first to recognize Iran's rights, and then we will take steps to ease any questions or any issues or concerns that they may have. But again, one final point that I'd like to make with regard to this question is that the Iranians do not believe the West really believes that Iran is developing a nuclear weapon. Western intelligence agencies have constantly admitted this. When the Israelis made more threats of war, Western agencies and Western officials and politicians stressed the fact that there's no evidence that Iran is producing nuclear weapons. So I think they know that this is untrue and that the accusations that they themselves have made are unfounded and that the Iranians are working within the framework of international law.
And of course, according to many experts, they have known that all the while, but they had continued to exert this pressure. But now it seems in general that there is a different mindset. Let's look at another aspect about it. They also, today, we had several reports that the United States had requested to have bilateral talks with Iran and that Iran refused to meet with them. Why would Iran refuse to talk to the United States?
Well, I think it's obvious. I mean, there's no reason why they should talk at this point. At a time when the Americans are imposing really, as I said, in my opinion, barbaric sanctions and embargoes on the country, trying to hurt ordinary Iranians, there's no point in talking. They have to behave in a more reasonable and rational manner before the other side talks. If the Iranians talk with the Americans at this juncture, it basically means it will be believed in the West. They will perceive that it is due to the pressure that they've been putting on Iran. So what the Iranians are doing instead is saying that, no, we're not going to talk. You have to change your attitude. You can't go around and threaten Iranians with war, bring in an extra carrier to threaten the Iranian people, because this is a form of terror. Mm-hmm. They're trying to terrorize the Iranian population. As I said, in my opinion, it had a complete counter effect, and that it makes the Iranians more hostile towards American policies. The sanctions, the embargo on the central bank oil, all of these, I think, have a reverse effect. But I think that Westerners, their main problem is that they listen to so-called Iran experts based in the United States and England, which have absolutely no idea of what's going on in the country. Some of them are Iranian Americans who have an agenda or who say what officials want them to say, mm-hmm. but they are misleading the United States. They've been misleading the European powers. Basically, the policies have made the United States and the Europeans very unpopular. Their policies are very unpopular. They've revealed themselves in the eyes of Iranian to be carrying out inhuman policies. And it has no effect. So I think that Mr. Jalili, Dr. Jalili, is making a statement by refusing to see the Americans. He's saying that you have to behave like rational human beings before we give you the honor of meeting our officials.
Okay. In the press conference with Dr. Jalili, there were several Western-based reporters that brought up the possibility or asked a question about the 20% enriched uranium, if Iran is likely to be flexible in dealing with that. And basically, Dr. Jalili basically sort of said that, you know, that's not even a point that we're looking at. We're beyond this at this time, because he said Iran has 850,000 patients, ill people that are relying upon that. Do you think that at this point in time, we touched on this a little bit already, but let's say, because there has to be some wheeling and dealing, give and takes, how likely would it be? Do you see it as a possibility at all that if they came back in Baghdad and said, okay, we will provide you with the 20% enriched uranium, do you think Iran would be flexible at all on this issue?
Well, I think there are a couple of things we'd have to take into account. One is that the Iranians didn't want to enrich uranium in the first place at 20%. Mm-hmm. They were willing to purchase it. Obama wrote a letter. He lied. After the Tehran declaration, he effectively discredited himself. So, how can the Iranians even trust Western countries to give them the fuel after they've betrayed Iran in the past? And this fuel is for cancer patients. In other words, Western governments took Iranian cancer patients hostage. That's what they did. Mm-hmm. So it was really not only a betrayal of trust, but it was immoral, highly immoral. So that, I think, would be a major issue for the Iranians. Secondly, even if they were to provide Iran with nuclear fuel at 20%, it would take a long period of time. At least that's what they said last time round. Whereas Iran needs the fuel now, and Iran is already producing the fuel. What the Iranians have said over the last few days, and I think this is a reasonable position, is that we need to produce enriched uranium at 20% for the Tehran reactor, which produces isotopes for cancer patients. Right. Once that is done, we no longer need to produce enriched uranium at 20%. So if the uranium that Iran produces at 20% is turned into fuel and it is put into the Tehran nuclear reactor, then it is no longer an issue.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end. Appreciate you being with us. And all eyes, I guess, will be on Baghdad May 23rd to see what happens. Dr. Mohammad Mohandi from University of Tehran, thank you so much
for
being with us. And viewers, thank you for being with us in another look at one of today's top headline stories. Join us right here, same time, same place tomorrow. I'm Marzia Hashmi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thanks so much for being with us, and goodbye.